The base training is going to lift that aerobic threshold, VT1, LT1. It's associated with lots of mitochondrial generation, and it's going to be the thing that we can build on. And if we don't have that and we just go straight into the lactate threshold training, it's not really as effective.
Welcome to the Athlete's Compass podcast. Each week, renowned sports scientist and founder of Athletica AI, Dr. Paul Larson, athlete, coach, and sports scientist Mariana Rakai, and coach and cyclist Paul Warlowski discuss training, racing, and improving your health and fitness. Get ready for your journey to peak performance. Hello and welcome to the Athlete's Compass podcast, where we navigate training, fitness, and health for everyday athletes. Today, we're diving deep into the science behind the crucial physiological boundary known by many names, the second threshold, critical power or pace, lactate threshold or FTP, to explore what it really means when your body switches from aerobic to more demanding energy systems. We'll cover practical strategies for identifying your personal threshold without lab equipment, proven training methods to raise it, and how this knowledge can transform your race strategy and overall endurance. So first of all, let's get down to the basics. What does second threshold or lactate threshold two, what does that mean in simple terms and how it differs from the first threshold? And I've got my pen ready and my notepad ready, so I'm taking notes.
Yeah, thanks, Paul. So yeah, I'm excited to get into this one today. Let's just kind of start first. The difference here between LT1 and LT2 or VT1 and VT2. So lactate threshold 1, lactate threshold 2, or sometimes we call this the ventilatory threshold 1 or ventilatory threshold 2. And the reason is the ventilation system is directly linked to the lactate system, all right? So in your Athletica power profile or pace profile, you'll actually see this as it's titled AET, basically like your aerobic threshold. So this is the VT1 or the LT1. And you know, you'll actually have a number there, and that's a predicted number. And it's similar to what you would get if you went into a laboratory and someone measured progressively how much lactate is being produced or could be from an earlobe prick or a finger prick. But basically, we all of a sudden see at that LT1, we see a substantial rise in that blood lactate level. And it's coupled with an increase in ventilation. All of a sudden, the respiratory buffering system starts to breathe higher as well, right? So you can pick it up in either or. And then, of course, we pick it up using AI as a likely predictor of where that sits just from your training data. Okay, now let's move into the second threshold. You will also see this in your Athletica profile. It is in orange, and we just title it threshold, but if you hover over it, it's actually your critical power or your critical pace. And again, this is just a predictor. This is like a functional predictor of the physiology that is going on within you. And going back to that, you know, that LT2, this is where this is the highest intensity where lactate is stable, and above that, fatigue rises quickly. Now, let's also let's connect our mind to how that feels. The LT1 is sort of your all day steady aerobic work. It's the top of your zone two, right? A lot of we talk about zone two training. Well, it's right at the borderline of where zone two training goes into your no man's land, like your zone three sort of world, where you would compete at like a half Ironman or an Ironman. That's sort of that's the zone three. Now, zone four or this LT2, that's what you would race a 40K time trial at, for example. If you're on the bike, you'd probably be right around that, anywhere from 20 to 40K of all out. That's sort of your LT2 area. And in the running context, think about something like a 10K race. You'd be running that like right around your LT2 as well. So yeah, it's relevant, sustainable intensity. And that's a really good place to mark zones in Athletica. So they're very practical for us in terms of being able to prescribe exercise intensities that kind of hover around this physiological landmark.
So what happens physiologically when an athlete crosses that second threshold?
Yeah. So at that point, great question, the exercise intensity and the energy needed for that, to achieve that functional intensity, it's all of a sudden at a point where you have to use a whole lot more of the glycolytic energy system. All right. So you've got your aerobic system where it's really using a mix of fat and carbohydrates burning in the mitochondria, and the mitochondria of the cells are the powerhouses. But then there's also energy that's produced in what's called the cytosol of the cell, so the cell space, and that's like an extra energy reserve where there's enzymes that can function to burn more energy, and they use carbohydrates. And all of a sudden, the byproduct of that carbohydrate oxidation is lactate, and it's a great system that we can always leverage whenever we have to run away from a tiger or burn sugar a little bit faster. And that's all of a sudden, going outside of that, like that higher glycolytic flux, it's called, and larger fast twitch or fiber 2 recruitment causes that like more lactate to be produced, which is associated with fatigue. It's not necessarily the cause of it, but this is everything sort of happening in this. And so there's other things that happen too. Like there's this rapid increase in ventilation that happens. There's an increased perceived effort. And then also you'll see heart rate is no longer stable. It's drifting upwards. Like your body's really working hard at this point to kind of compensate. But there is this, it's like the last available steady state period before going into overdrive.
So how is, we talked about a lot of different names, how is LT2 different than VT2, different than FTP, functional threshold power, or critical power or pace, or are they all kind of talking about the same thing?
Yes. So they are all trying to estimate the same thing, but the difference is that the LT2, lactate threshold 2, or the ventilatory threshold 2, you're measuring with ventilation, those are physiological breakpoints. But the whether it be FTP or critical power, these are functional observations that are occurring at this, right? So remember that FTP is 20 minutes all out, the greatest power or pace that you can go at that for that duration, and then take 5% ultimately for FTP. Critical power would be similar, and these tend to correspond, but not always, but tend to correspond with the physiological breakaway points. So when you're looking at your Athletica charts, we obviously you're not doing a physiological assessment at this point, so you're just getting the functional marker. But that's still very, very useful. And from a practical standpoint, it's not that there isn't value going to the laboratories, but you look at the price point, paying $200 to $400 to go into a laboratory to get this assessed, it's a little bit more economically feasible to do a couple of functional tests and get a pretty close marker as well.
I often or sometimes get a question: why are we not? Or somebody has done lab tests and then they come to Athletica and our estimation is not corresponding. It might be off a little bit or sometimes a lot, and they wonder why, where's the difference coming from? So that's their answer.
That's the answer for sure. And remember that you're always welcome to change those manually. And now on the new user interface, you just go to your sport profile and pick the profile that is meaningful to you. You've got your options from cycling, running, swimming, and rowing. And then you have, if you go below the chart, like the functional profile chart, if you look below that, you'll find your training zones and you'll have your threshold power that's there. So that is your, what we're talking about here today, that is your, your second threshold power or pace, and you can manually change that there to the level that you want, and in both the heart rate and the power or pace. So it's fully customizable. that's where you insert it, and your zone should update accordingly.
So, Paul, you've seen a lot of physiological tests, and like, how much can, because sometimes I'm a little puzzled when people complain about 5 watt watts difference. We tend to forget, like, when you go to a lab, it's just the one point in time that you do that test, and comparing, for example, power measurement on a bike that is in a lab setting. Maybe it's not even your own bike. Maybe it is, but how much can day-to-day variation play in the role here? Like, what are we talking about? Like, can one person perform like 10, 15 watts better one day compared to like week later or whatnot?
Yeah.
And so, like, let's say the same test, 20-minute all out, like regular FTP test. Like, how much have you seen in your top athletes? Like, how much of a difference?
Well, the answer is, honestly, it depends, because if you're just starting back training, say, for example, we're in the winter off season right now. And when you go back in the very first test that you do, you might be not as top as you were back in the peak of last season. And at that point in the game, the changes are quite quick. And you would see 10 or 15 watt changes within a week, potentially, if the training is regular, right? If you're all of a sudden laying down base and laying down a, you know, a few high intensity sessions, the changes are quite rapid to a point. So in that context, they can be quite rapid. Back to the other point that you made about the comparison of the laboratory test, where you might actually do that on a different bike. Like, you know, you'd go into a laboratory, they're often equipped with Lodi cycle ergometers or others. Who knows what that power output is relative to the power meter that you might use. A lot of laboratories now are actually using ergometers that can use your own bike, which is great. And then I think we have that's improving sort of the validity of the marker. But again, we're always comparing these physiological occurrences, right? And this would be VT1 or LT1 that I mentioned before, and LT2 and VT2. And then you're comparing those with the functional markers as well. My bias, based on the athletes that I coach, is that the functional stuff matters. Like, this is the functional stuff, what you do on your power meter out in the field, that's going to be relating to performance. Because you're out in the field, and that is performance, right? So that's why I prefer doing these on your own bike with your own power meter and your own heart rate monitor, and ideally on the same hill. So many of my athletes, we'd always have we'd declare what the hill is. This is going to be your test hill, and this is where you're doing like your repeated performance tests. And that's my personal preference. So. Because then you've got the same power meter, you've got the same hill, and yes, the environment may change a little bit, wind, rain, heat, all these sorts of things, but more or less.
So does a race day too.
Same with race, exactly, right?
You don't know what you get.
Yeah, they tend to be not too bad. So, yeah, I don't know if I answered your question, MJ, but that's poked around a few issues there.
Yeah, so basically there can be a lot of variation between test week results. There can be difference between the lab and the real world setting based on how it's executed.
Absolutely, yeah. It can be really large, especially if the power meter isn't the same and the bike isn't the same as your bike. Mm-hmm. So that's a big one. If you can wipe that one out and you're using your own bike with your own power meter, boom, now we're talking. And then, yeah. And then, but then again, everything that you're measuring in that laboratory, they are internal physiological markers of occurrences that are happening in that instance. They don't necessarily, they're not necessarily going to happen next week if you test them again. Maybe they will, but maybe they won't.
Yeah. And like, how you sleep and eat can affect those swells.
Yeah. all these different things, right? So this is my bias, but this is where the system like Athletica really shines, because it's, you know, one of the key things that we always look for in science, and specifically laboratory tests, is the process of reliability and its repeatability. It's the ability to kind of, you know, do your tests time and time again. And when you are doing that in Athletica, and when you're getting that marker day in and day out, you're seeing what that reliable marker is. And that could be, you know, even the way we do heart rate variability overnight, it's time and time again, night after night. And it's in the same sort of process, right? And it's Garmin's going through the same process, and it's finding the lowest marker of HRV through the night as you sleep. Boom, that's the marker. We always do that same thing every night. And it's the same with your training. You're using the same power meter, you're using the same heart rate monitor, hopefully. Yeah, and there's subtle changes and stuff. But you know, it's again, the repeatability of those items or those variables are so close together versus the laboratory marker, where you're getting this snapshot of randomness, where from 1 week to another week, and who knows how much difference could be in there, or month, you know, the next month or whatever. So
what's the value of doing a lab test then?
Well, it's a good question. I think, first of all, understanding. One of the big ones for lab tests is substrate oxidation, because if we do a metabolic test and you're wearing the VO2 equipment, you're measuring output of carbon dioxide and intake of oxygen, and you can use some equations to get some insight into how much carbohydrate versus fat that you're burning. And one of the key problems that we see often are athletes that don't have a really good solid base behind them, and they lack the ability to burn fat as a fuel. And if you're right off the get-go having to burn carbohydrate, glucose, you don't really have, you're not be able to kind of access that nice base of fat stores, which is the all-day energy source, back to the LT1 definition that I started with, or the in Athletica AET, aerobic threshold. You're not able to even get that. If that's suspected by the coach, the coach can order a metabolic test to confirm that. And you really can only get that confirmation of that if you're actually measuring that with gases. So that's where it's, to me, that's where it's mostly useful.
What types of workouts, if we're taking this idea of thresholds, what kind of workouts are going to be most effective for raising that second threshold? Because I mean, this is an obvious statement, we want that to increase.
We do. I mean, it's the same concept as FTP or CP, critical power, right? So you, of course, there's a strong association, but not absolute, but a strong association between that and your performance, how much power you can or pace you can produce. So yeah, you do want to improve that. And probably, like, no surprise, the principle of specificity holds true. So if we do periods of time at that power or pace, broken up, these are usually called moderate intensity training efforts, because they would be at or just below. They could also be just above too. Like an over-under would be a classic session where we would do that too, right? So over-under, in the word, you're over and under that that marker, right? So you're doing a little bit of time, maybe 1 minute above, just above, maybe in zone five. And then below that, in theory, you're kind of recovering. Maybe that you're in zone 3A. But man, you've already pushed out this big push of glycolytic energy and O2 debt ultimately. And even though you're at zone 3A, you're recovering, but not really enough, right? And it really stings for the rest of that zone 3A portion. So that's a great segment to do it at. Yeah.
Yeah, those over-unders. You know, when you first start doing them, like in the beginning of build, they feel totally different than at the end of the build. Like, you know, when you're ready to perform a long distance event, when those start to feel much doable and you can, you know, repeat the efforts.
Yeah. And let's just think about what's happening there, right? So I gave you everyone a background of what's going on. So we've got these two areas in the muscle cells, the cytosol, or the space in the cell, where this is where the glycolysis takes place and the lactate gets produced. And then you've got the energy production part of the cell, the mitochondria. And in the over situation, you've maxed out that glycolytic sort of situation, and then you've moved into the mitochondrial sort of space in the recovery area, and the mitochondria have to do all this work to quench all the lactate that's been produced. And then the next time you do that, well, let's go and recover now. There's in the recovery process, you've signaled for more mitochondria to be produced, because the cells do not like that. And their job now is to produce more mitochondria. So just like you said, MJ, you said, oh, I hate it when I do that for the very first time. But, oh, next time I go and do that next week, it's all of a sudden not quite as bad. And then a week after that again, not quite as bad again. And that's because you've created you've driven the adaptation process, and your fast twitch muscle fibers have created more of the mitochondria, and they are there now to make this, you're more durable. You've probably done everything you need now to lift that second threshold, which was the whole purpose of these, because now you can do all of this, this high intensity more aerobically, and you don't need to rely on the glycolytic, aspect of this anymore. And that's the whole purpose of why you do that type of training.
So how do intervals at threshold or just below differ from those that are just above? I mean, just above, things are going to start breaking down at that point.
Yeah. I mean, this is where, Paul, there's more than one way to skin a cat. You can go about this many different ways. This is where long intervals, VO2 max work, short interval VO2 max works, over-unders work, just specific threshold training works. It's all kind of doing the same sort of thing. And this is where you can, if you're bored of the same one, or you want to see if you adapt a different way, it's a great to be able to leverage the workout wizard and flip that around and do a little bit of a different session if you know the principles that we're teaching right here, right? So yeah, there's not a one size fits all, but there's, and this is why it's good to kind of work around that threshold, to do some of your work above it, and then definitely lots of work below it. One thing we haven't mentioned that's so critical, this is where the importance of a good period of base training is so important to improve your tolerability to this, right? Because the base training is going to lift that aerobic threshold, VT1, LT1. It's associated with lots of mitochondrial generation, and it's going to be, the thing that we can build on. And if we don't have that, and we just go straight into the lactate threshold training, these over-unders, all that sort of stuff, it's not really as effective. That is one that tends to be one of those rules. And again, from Tim Noakes' Laura Running book, he quotes Osler, 1967. Osler called this adaptation energy. So you've got to have that adaptation energy. And we know adaptation energy now is ultimately speaking about the ability to burn fat as a fuel back to the base.
What's the biggest mistake that you see people do with trying to increase their threshold?
Probably just workouts that are consistently too hard. So there's a lot of there's a lot of advice out there that you just got to train hard all the time, right? And you can do that, no question. You can do that, but it's not as sustainable. And you've got to have that base around it. This is what we know works so much better. If you have the base, if you're building that high intensity training on top of the base, awesome. You're going to have success. If you are just going straight in from day dot one and we're doing high intensity work all the time without, you know, straight into build training without a solid base, you may break down, maybe just, yeah, you're running yourself into the ground a little bit.
When you say too hard, are you thinking like too much high intensity training or threshold intervals too hard, like too high intensity or too many?
Like all of the above. There's yeah. all those yeah. different ways to get too much high intensity work in your uh-huh. in your system without the buffering of the aerobic part around it. Right. Remember the Norwegian model ultimately, and this is from Øyvind Sandbeck's great interview and recent paper of 12 of Norway's top coaches with that were most decorated. There were over 350 medal level athletes. And remember that in their review, they found that all these programs had that aerobic base. So it was traditional periodization. So they had the aerobic base, they had the adaptation energy, and then they had just three quality sessions in that week, right? And those sessions that were quality were all of the stuff that we were sort of talking about here already in those different ways, whether it's VO2 max, over-unders, threshold works, short intervals, all those, you know, different ways to skin the cat depending on what you're feeling, but just three quality ones in that week. And that tended to be the recipe for the success.
Mm-hmm. So I know some people, when they're looking at zone four training, like intervals, they're always aiming at the top of the zone four. So it's okay to go a little bit under. Actually, don't always sure. have to aim at the top of the zone.
For sure, especially if you know the set is going to be long, right? That's mm-hmm. really when, and we learn that when we're doing your velocity sessions, MJ. And I love how you coach them, and you are always keeping an eye on everyone's intensity, and you're reminding us to hold a little bit back. We've still got some to go here. You call people out in the session and you're saying I see you're doing really well. You're at the top of that zone. Remember, are you still going to be at the top of that zone later on? Right. And it's a great reminder. Mm-hmm. And you're absolutely right. Like you want to be in there. You want to continue to give your muscles that signal to be able to adapt. And you do that by, this is the Norwegian method wording. They call it intensity control. And, MJ, spending so much time in that Norway program, I know you know all about intensity control, and that's what you're trying to teach us, which is awesome.
Mm-hmm. I know Dr. Seiler always talks about accumulating time in the zone, in whatever zone that might be that you're working on with the threshold. And going too hard is going to prevent you from accumulating that time because you just can't manage the whole time. How do athletes know that they're working at or right at their second threshold? What kind of signs do they have?
Well, yeah, that's I think there's always three key ones that we can all use. Most of us have the key tools. Most of us have a power meter or a GPS monitor, so we're getting some indication of the pace or the power that we're going at relative to our zones. We also have a heart rate, and if there's a prolonged period of time, then it will reach that plateau. And so that's another marker where you know if you've gone long enough, you'll actually get into that zone too. But probably the number one is the feel. You want to develop your feel for that zone four as well. And it feels hard. Like it feels hard and you're just below the unsustainable part, but you're like, you're kind of thinking about it and you're like, no, if I was doing 40K TT, this is what I'd be holding it. This is what I'd be holding at, kind of thing. So And the more you do these things, the more you get a hold on it. So, and if you haven't got that yet, that's okay. Just be patient, learn from your last session. You know when you haven't got this right because you fade and your power just goes, right? Because I'm still learning this.
What do you mean? Like, you're so good at pacing yourself.
Yeah, but I still blow it sometimes as well. You know, it's but it's like, it's a learnt skill is mm-hmm. in terms of intensity control. And I've been training a while and I'm still learning it.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned something about long enough, like when it comes to heart rate. Let's talk about assessing your effort by heart rate on these zone 4 intervals.
Sure. Well, your heart rate can hold at zone 4. Like, so for example, if you're going to, think of you doing a race. If you've ever looked back at a race trace, you know, whether it's a 10K run or a 40K TT on the bike, like you'll see it. It'll just, you know, after 5 minutes, it will go up there and it will just kind of hold. And usually if you're conditioned, it will lock in at that heart rate. And of course it usually drifts a little bit more, just a little bit more until it's at the max. You'll see this if you do a 5K TT run as well, which is a kind of the calibration test for our runners. And you can see that even that last 10 minutes is where it goes out. But it will lock in at that. It's the last sustainable point of sustainable pace or power. Mm-hmm. And it will, you can definitely hold that for 5 or 10 minutes. And that's a great marker of knowing that you're in the zone. Of course, it will usually get higher and higher and higher, like just a little bit higher and higher. If the pace or power is the same, you may have to decrease the power or pace if you want to maintain that heart rate zone throughout as well. And there's no right or wrong way to do that. The key thing is to try to accumulate time in that zone. Because like we said before, you're going to get better if following a recovery period. Don't kill yourself. Always leave. Like you could do a little bit at the very end, you know, don't absolutely smash yourself, or if the next session is the most important session. But yeah, like you want to, and then also look back at time and zone. So look at your session analysis, look at what the goal of the session was in terms of time and zone, and see what you achieved relative to that. I always love doing that, especially when I'm in the coaching process as well. Looking at what their time and zone was, and then giving them some advice accordingly. That time and zone recommendation is there for a purpose.
But it will take a little bit of a time for the heart rate to catch up, right?
Oh yeah, there's a lag time, no question.
Lag time, yeah. So
like I said before, if you were going to do this like a time trial, you'll always notice that it takes 5 minutes to get up to steady state, mm-hmm. and then it plateaus mm-hmm. and then just drifts slowly.
So it's better to do the intervals. Like say you have 3-4 minute intervals, it's better to do that by pace or power instead of trying to get your heart rate to go up to the target.
That's a really good point. And so for zone 4 and higher, yeah, go by pace or power. For zone 3 or lower, go for the heart rate. Mm-hmm. Usually there'll be longer ones as well. So I'm coaching a runner right now and we're having this exact conversation. So we're in the base period and we're focusing mostly on zone 2 training or below. So very heart rate clamped kind of work. But we also are doing one tempo session a week. And in that tempo session, that's where I'm looking at the heart rate because mm-hmm. So sometimes the first one might be in it, but then the heart rate drifts in the second one. So now I'm asking the athlete to clamp that, actually bring the power or the pace that she's running down so that the heart rate is still clamped at that. And again, we're trying to back to the intensity control. I don't want excessive stress in the athlete's diet, training diet. Mm-hmm. And again, this goes back to where you asked about what's the most common problem that I see in training programs across the world, and it's just too much high intensity. So yeah. There's a time and place, and the intensity balance, easy and hard, that's the key thing that advances us.
So your aim with the runner is that she, coming off a base, or you are in a base now, after a few weeks or a few months of doing one tempo session, that she can hold that tempo pace without a drift of heart rate to zone 4 or upper zone 3. Am I correct?
Yeah. So last week she put her pace was too high, and mm-hmm. her heart rate drifted up into zone 4. Mm-hmm. So this week I'm asking her to go to drop the treadmill speed down. We're in the winter here, but drop the treadmill speed down and just hold that heart rate. That's what I'm asking for. And my prediction, if we're adapting right, is that pace will get higher and higher at the same heart rate, but the heart mm-hmm. rate will kind of hold in those zones. And back to what the key adaptations that we're asking for in all of these, her body should make more mitochondria to produce, drive the whole process more aerobically, and less cytosolic blood lactate will be produced. And this is a positive that ultimately her training becomes less stressful for her as she goes. But if we're always hitting that too hard, we don't adapt. That's not the fastest road to Rome.
So that's a good way to teach the intensity control mentally on a treadmill, because you're so locked into a one speed or pace. Mm-hmm. And when you're running free, it's much harder to control your speed, right? Because you just kind of drift. You start feeling good. You start feeling all the, you know, energy, lactate. You're like, oh yeah, I'm running. I'm moving. But yeah, that's a really good way to teach that. Ultimately, it is self-control.
It is. Well, actually, with most of my Ironman champions that I've been blessed to be able to coach, that's I've almost done like 50-50 treadmill and outdoor running. Mm-hmm. And because you can just control so well the intensity of the treadmill for like for key sets and tempo sets, whatever. So. Mm-hmm.
Your answer a minute ago was a good segue to the question about how do you know the threshold training is actually working without more field testing?
Well, this is the beauty of invisible monitoring to me, mm-hmm. Paul. And it's just the fact that, you know, we should, again, if everything's working and the athlete's healthy, we should see next week, we should see faster speeds, even slightly, you know, as Luke Evans told us on the podcast, like everything is just, the improvements are just so slow. And if the name of the game in this endurance training world is patience. But if we're patient next week, we should see a small bump in that running speed relative to that heart rate. And if the athlete does what I asked her to do, she should control that intensity, and the heart rate should not drift up into zone 4 like it did this week. So that will be sort of success. But again, everything will just keep drifting up. And that whole, if we look at that power and pace profile that's in that nice blog that written by Andrea Zagnoli, where we're actually looking at how Athletica uses invisible monitoring to capture the power and pace chart that you'll see in your Athletica sport profiles, on the left-hand panel. And you'll have a look at all of the cycling power profiles, the running pace profiles, et cetera, et cetera.
All right. Anything else you want to add to this discussion of threshold, Paul or Mariana?
I think a lot of it, you know, it's kind of coming down to this this topic of durability. That Harrison Dudley Rode, who's working with us now, he wrote a great blog for us on this. but we're trying to actually look at that concept of durability. And when we're looking at durability, it's like the word suggests, right? You're durable. You're not breaking down. And I think, you know, when you're doing some of this training that we talked about, over-unders, short intervals, long intervals, base zone two training, it's all working towards being more durable. That is really what the what we should be looking at with that, you know, the second threshold. The second threshold really should be an awesome indicator, you know, getting towards that indicator of durability. And of course, there's other things too. There's other factors. But as our technology improves, we want to really be looking at how well that heart rate holds to sustain any of those paces or powers. And, you know, we're working on in the back on, you know, the ability to create a durability index. And that's really, I think, that's the dream where we would like this to go in the next year or two. And as we look at it, that's what all the training should be going to produce, a more durable individual and with that heightened second threshold.
Wow. That would be cool because that would give us a really great measure of how things are working.
It would, yeah. And especially when, if we can relate that back to the athlete's performance, because that's what they care about. So that's a work in progress.
Well, stay tuned.
Stay tuned.
Yeah. Well, thank you for listening today to the Athlete's Compass podcast. Take a moment now, subscribe, share, and let's keep navigating this endurance adventure together. Improve your training with the science-based training platform Athletica and join the conversation at the Athletica Forum. For Mariana Rakai and Dr. Paul Larson, I'm Paul Worlowski, and this has been the Athlete's Compass podcast. Thank you so much for listening. We hope you enjoyed another episode of the Athlete's Compass podcast, your North Star through the sometimes complicated world of training for your endurance sport. We appreciate your comments and training questions and your 5-star reviews. For a deeper dive into the science of endurance sports, listen to the Training Science Podcast and check out the adaptive AI training platform athletica.ai. Thanks for listening.